Welcome back to the program. Don't forget, top of the hour, we'll be joined by Keith Tkachuk, former NHLer, member of the USA Hockey Hall of Fame, and hockey dad with 1,000 points. Hockey dad to Matthew and Brady Tkachuk. We all know that by now. George Richards of Florida Hockey Now. We'll talk to us about a very impressive Florida Panthers squad, and we'll be joined by Eric Engels from Sportsnet.ca to talk about the fire in Montreal. 0-4 to start the season. Habs have only scored 3 goals in 4 games. Mark Bergevin's name perpetually trending on Twitter, regardless of whether there's a game on or not. Quick note here, Amanda Stein, who covers the New Jersey Devils. This should come as no surprise, given what Lindy Ruff said yesterday, but Devils' Jack Hughes not on the ice for practice. That sucks. You hope he gets back out there. He's started really good for the Devils. Let's turn our attention now to the Los Angeles Kings. Tough loss last night, but this is a really fascinating team. Is it a team that's still in transition? Is it a team that's ready to win? Is it a team that still has some more pain and lottery picks on the horizon? To answer these and many other questions is our good friend Lisa Dillman from The Athletic. Lisa, how are you today?
I'm just fine. How are you?
I'm doing good. Really quick, before we get to Los Angeles Kings and last night, and Kopitar goes off for 5 and Doughty wants to make Team Canada a lot of the hot button issues around the Los Angeles Kings. Outside of L.A., because I'm always curious what grabs people's attention when you're almost singularly focused on the Los Angeles Kings. When you have a look at the greater NHL, what story intrigues you the most?
Well, I was listening to your intro, and Montreal intrigues me up to no end, like the rest of the world. everything's so magnified there. It's like, you know, it's like Manchester United and Barcelona rolled into one. So, you know, it's just like this, you know, long running soap opera. You just don't know what's going to happen next there.
You don't. And I'll tell you, one of the problems that Montreal has right now is they don't have Philippe Deneau. Like, I know there's a lot of talk about how there's no Carey Price and there's no Shea Weber. And listen, that may be it for Shea Weber's career. And we hope that, you know, Carey Price, the person, gets better so the Carey Price, the goaltender, can show up for the Montreal Canadiens. I think the one they really miss right now is Philippe Deneau. And the Los Angeles Kings are very much the beneficiary of that. What have you seen from Deneau right now, other than perhaps the obvious, which is take some of the defensive responsibility away from Kopitar so he can score more? What do you see in Deneau so far, Lisa?
Well, I think you're absolutely right that they do miss him, and he's shown me a little bit more than I expected. He's had the ability to make players around him better. I think he's really been a benefit to Alex Iafallo and Adrian Kempe. Now, last night, he was the only one that was semi-decent in the faceoff circle. Andre Kopitar, I've never seen him struggle quite so much as he did last night. He was 0 for 7 in the first period and 6 for 20 for the night. So, you know, that's when I'm sure Rob Blake is thinking, thank goodness we signed Phil Deneau. You know, everybody they added was going to bring a specific thing. And he, you know, he adds the things we've spoken about, the depth of the middle, the ability to take faceoffs, to help up and down the lineup. He was, you know, supposed to help Gabe Vilardi, you know, slotting Vilardi down from second line center to third line center. And so far, you know, it is early, I have to say, but that hasn't quite manifested itself. But, you know, everything he's advertised, and, you know, we're not in the room, so it's really hard to see the interactions with him and his teammates, but, you know, he just speaks leadership and, you know, that typical cliche heart and soul player. Like, you can even see that from not being in the room on a daily basis.
You mentioned Rob Blake there a second ago, and I am curious, as someone who covers the Los Angeles Kings in Los Angeles, I'm sure you saw the Larry Brooks report yesterday, when it came out, speculating about, you know, Luke Robitaille and Mark Bergevin and old buddies, and could they be reunited in Los Angeles? Bergevin with 1 year left on his contract in Montreal. When you see that story, and knowing the Kings as well as you do, knowing the NHL as well as you do, what goes through Lisa Dillman's mind?
Well, Larry, you know, first off is, you know, I think he's going into the, you know, he's a Hall of Famer, and Larry's well connected. And, you know, I'm trying to think back to some of the stories that he's written, you know, about the Kings in the past, and you know, first of all, he's a colleague. You can never dismiss anything out of hand. And there's always, you know, there's often, there's often, well, like I'm going to use another cliche, where there's smoke, there's fire. But I still remember a few years ago, Dean Lombardi was still the general manager of the Kings, and Larry had had the story of how the players, you know, had barricaded Daryl Sutter out of the dressing room in Tampa. Yeah. And, you know, and Dean Lombardi admitted that part of that was true. It wasn't, like, not every single element of it was right on, but there was something to it. Now this, I don't know if he is putting two and two together, or, you know, my colleague Pierre LeBrun reported recently, and I do know this, that Rob's contract is up after the season, so I don't know if he's just putting things together and seeing if they fit. You know, we're three games in. There's an awful long way to go, and I have to tell you, there have been reports and rumors in previous years that, you know, Rob was you know, out the door, and you know, he's still there.
See, the thing is, though, I mean, this is Montreal, where I maintain, and I guess, Lisa, in a lot of ways, you can say this about every Canadian market, and you know this. It may be an 82 game season, but in Montreal, it's 82 one game seasons. Like that's the way it feels. Like, it's not a, hey, this is a long season, it's 82 games. No, there are 82 one game seasons in Montreal. Does it feel that way to you, even from the, you know, the other end of the continent?
It does. It does. Having spent time there over the years, and it's at the other end of the spectrum here. We're on the other end of the galaxy, where it is not like that. And that players can fly safely into the radar. You know, like a player goes shopping in a grocery store in Calgary, or, you know, Montreal would be much worse. But, you know, you've got all eyes on them. You know, the guy leaves the store. You know, the person's telling the next person what he did, what he ordered, what he said. You know, there's not that here. You know, I see like a Nate Thompson, you know, a few years ago in a Whole Foods walking around, and nobody's bothering him. So it's a pretty special place in terms they can. It's a great place to play in terms of, if you underachieve, there's not the same kind of heat here that there is, you know, in Montreal, Calgary, Edmonton, or even, you know, Chicago, Minnesota, for that matter. So, but, and if you are succeeding, you're a hero in the South Bay.
Give us your thoughts on what we've seen so far from the Los Angeles Kings. Going into this season, I wondered, you know, how much this was no longer going to be a team in transition, a team that's, you know, blending in some of the young players. And, you know, I looked at some of the offseason moves, and in comes a 28-year-old Victor Arvidsson, for example. This is still a team that, you know, and you know, we just mentioned Phil Deneau, who comes in. He's 28 years old. Is this a team that, in their minds, had a couple of years of rebuilding, and then Doughty and Kopitar said, okay, that's enough of this, and then went back to adding veteran players? Like, I don't know that I have a handle on LA as much as I should. So help me out, Lisa. Who are the Los Angeles Kings?
Well, everybody always acts like or believes that the teardown is really the hardest part, and it really isn't. I think they are in the most difficult part of the transition. They're saying they're done with the rebuild. I guess I have to come up with a catchy phrase to decide what, or to pick what they're in right now. But this is the hard part. It doesn't go, they don't incorporate two or three of the young kids, and the kids start scoring and taking off. It's like, I always keep saying, it's not linear, and in fact they could take a step back. You know, the bottom six is really underachieved so far. You know, not all the prospects are going to hit it like everybody envisions. Mm-hmm. Some could be used as bargaining chips for, you know, other deals to enhance the team down the road, or you know, they could simply, you know, end up on waivers, end up someplace else down the road.
It is interesting. It's a fascinating team, but I'll tell you one thing. I loved seeing Kopitar on that first night. I think we all did. And Drew Doughty, who you've dealt with extensively, I've dealt with only on a few seldom occasions, most recently in Chicago with the Players Tour. I think he's one of the best personalities in the NHL. And, you know, when you have a Drew Doughty who comes into the season saying, I don't want anyone to forget about me from Team Canada, you watch his play a little bit extra, because you know that as much as he's playing for the Los Angeles Kings, he's also auditioning for Team Canada. It's early. Three games in. What have you seen from Doughty so far?
Yeah, basically, you know, Doug Armstrong, keep looking at me. And that's they actually play in St. Louis later this week. They wrap up their four-game trip with two games there. So I would be stunned if he did not come out with his best. And he has shown his best so far. He even said, I mean, you just have to, like you said, you have to love a guy like that, that wears his heart in his sleeve, doesn't spout cliches. He even said after the opener, you know, I hope they're watching. And I think he means, you know, the Team Canada decision makers plus the Norris Trophy voters. But, you know, like most guys will say, they kind of hide behind the usual team, and he does do that. He's quite, you know, he's a team player, but he won't shy about, won't back off on how he feels. So right. This is a special year for him, and so far, you know, he's had, you know, that first night that you referenced, you know, lights out great, and you know, he's had points in every game, and the two leaders of the team, are. You know, I think Dowdy said something like, we want to drive the bus. And so far, they are doing that. But unfortunately, there's lots of passengers in the back of the bus.
I want to ask you about Cal Peterson, who to me is a fascinating goaltender. And there is a transition happening now between Jonathan Quick to Cal Peterson. And here's someone that was, you know, drafted by the Buffalo Sabres. Chose to go the Jimmy Vesey route and fill out at Notre Dame, and then, you know, ends up as a free agent with the Los Angeles Kings. And, you know, he's been spectacular, albeit in, you know, limited performances so far. He's a guy that, you know, I tend not to make up my mind about goalies until I see 100 games, mm-hmm. and he's only just over halfway there. But from what I've seen so far, Lisa, you're closer to it than I am. I like what I see. What do the Kings think they have in Cal Peterson?
Oh yeah, there's a growing respect around the league for his game, and you know far better than I do how it can be one of the hardest positions to predict going forward. It can be so up and down. But you know, he's played in two of the first three, really probably deserved a better fate last night. He was the reason it was just a one goal loss. I mean, he is, you know, very calm, very controlled, smooth, good rebound control. And you know, everybody talks about Bill Ranford's influence on the organization, and you know, you just have to go back through all the years, including, you know, goalies that are excelling elsewhere, like Jack Campbell and Darcy Kemper, mm-hmm. and Bill's influence is considerable. But you know, Cal Peterson is his own guy. It's a really interesting situation how they'll sort of navigate the transition, because, you know, Jonathan Quick is not going to say, oh, yeah, I'm going gently into the night. You know, there's going to be a snarl there, and that's what makes him so, you know, competitive. But I think, you know, the organization, it's been clear for quite some time that they have really targeted him as the goalie of the future and had this belief in him, and you know, it was manifested in the big extension on the eve of camp. So 3 years, $15 million, which starts next season. So and he doesn't seem like he gets, you know, too up and down. He stays, you know, stays within himself. But I've really liked what I've seen, you know, so far, even though we are only in just starting week two.
Come for the LA Kings analysis, stay for the Dylan Thomas quotes. Ladies and gentlemen, Lisa Dillman from The Athletic. I love it. Lisa, when you look around the rest of the division, I mean, we look at this division, the Pacific, and we say, listen, we fully expect the Vegas Golden Knights to be the class of it, although with their injuries right now, that may be closer to jump ball than not. Edmonton Oilers look good. I think the Seattle Kraken already are showing who they're going to be, and that is a team that can, you know, defend well, and if they have good goaltending, can squeak out some wins, but they're going to have a hard time scoring. Vancouver without Quinn Hughes looks a whole lot different on that back end. They had a tough loss against the Buffalo Sabres last night. Anaheim has surprised a couple of teams early, but I don't think that necessarily is sustainable. How do you, when you look around, like who the Los Angeles Kings are swimming in an ocean with, who stands out for you? Like, who are the LA Kings up against here mainly?
Well, basically when I sort of assessed it going into the season, I was like everybody, I was sort of saying Vegas and Edmonton, the class of the division, and they would really need Calgary and Vancouver to underachieve there to even have a chance. But I am probably, showing my Southern California roots here, but I've watched Anaheim a little bit more early than I usually do. But you know, they could be the team that really there's always going to be a surprise team in the division, and they could be it. I mean, you know, we talked about goaltending a minute ago, and we're seeing, you know, John Gibson. You know, is there any goalie who is, you know, he's always so good early, and he's showing that again. A lot of their kids I really like. You know, Zegras, Drysdale, and now McTavish, who's unfortunately injured. But, yeah. And, you know, even Sam Steele comes up with a big game last night. I guess he's not really a kid anymore. But they've got some exciting players, and so they could end up being that team that sort of makes that surprise move. You mentioned Seattle, and unfortunately they're just going to have to deal with and suffer with comparisons to Vegas and what Vegas did in its first season, and that's just probably, you know, wildly unfair. I was there a lot that first season, and it was just like some of this, you know, golden path for the Golden Knights, and you know, just to think of that. Oh yeah, the next expansion team will do that too is just crazy and unrealistic.
First of all, don't you ever say that Sam Steele is no longer a kid, because that makes me feel old.
What about me?
watched him play with Regina. I know, right? Like, all the, I look at it now.
Google
and
his
just
age
like
right now and feel extremely old.
Jeez. Lisa, before we wrap up with you, I've always been a very accomplished tennis player. What's one of the things we know about Lisa Dillman? What we don't know, but I'm sure you can shed some light on, is you're an emerging golfer now, I understand, as well. True or false, Lisa Dillman? You're a golfer.
It sounds
now.
Like you've been talking to sources close to me.
Sources say.
Sources say, well, it's really one of those things that I never thought I would take up. And I can talk to you about that at some other point, but and I'm just intrigued by it and how difficult it is. But what I do like about it, and I golfed a few, started in the cottage country. In fact, a course near Halliburton where Bernie Nichols spends a lot of time. But
yeah,
again, that's a story for another day. Yeah. So I like it how you can go out there and I'm concentrating on not being horrible and hitting anybody and not embarrassing myself. So my mind is locked in on that task for 2 to 3 hours, and I'm not thinking about anything else. I'm not thinking about work. I'm not thinking about anything. So that's what I love, just being out there and trying to, like, figure out the nuances of this game that probably, you know, is just going to exasperate me, you know, on a minute-by-minute basis.
See, I'm not a golfer, not much. I mean, I've been out a few times, but no one would ever accuse me of being a golfer. All my friends keep saying, you got to do it. It's so relaxing, great way to spend an afternoon. Yet whenever I go out with them, Lisa, they're frustrated, they're cranky, they're angry. It is the opposite of relaxed. I know it's early on in your golf career, but what kind of golfer are you? Are you a frustrated, angry golfer, or are you more zen about your golf experience?
Ooh, zen. I don't think zen's a word anybody'd use with me. It was funny. One of the scouts the other day, I was telling him about it, and one of the King's European scouts, and he said, how many F-bombs were there on the course over the weekend? I said, well, you know, not too many. But I'm probably somewhere in the middle, like most people. And I think we are really overstating my golfing. I'm very, very much a beginner. I've been out on a course, you know, you can count it on one hand. So it's very, very early days. Maybe I'll have a better answer for you, but, and if I do get frustrated and dislike it as much as, like, you're sort of indicating that could happen, I probably will, you know, put the golf clubs away and pick up the tennis rackets.
Yeah, just go hit a tennis ball. There's something really I've always found really soothing and satisfying about smashing a tennis ball. I'm with you. Lisa, we're up against the clock. Thanks so much for stopping by, sharing your expertise on the Los Angeles Kings. I really appreciate it. You be well. We'll check back regular.
Thank you. Great catching up. Bye-bye.
There she is, Lisa Dillman from The Athletic, covering the Los Angeles Kings. Tough one last night, 2-1 at the hands of the Nashville Predators. But an interesting squad, nonetheless, in a division, the Pacific, that is very much wide open. All right, hour two is on the horizon. We'll talk to Eric Engels about the Fire in Montreal. 0-4, only scored 3 goals. Mark Bergevin's name continues to trend. We'll talk to him. We will also talk to George Richards of Florida Hockey Now. Panthers are red hot to start the season. But next, Keith Tkachuk, former NHL forward, USA Hockey Hall of Famer, and dad of Matthew and Brady. He's next.
It's a family business. Nobody wants to deal with the Tkachuks in this, but we do it by a committee. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, Brady
How's
might be.
How's he doing? How's he doing
great.
Through this?
Oh, I want to hear what you, Brady might be.
He might be pulling a classic Kachuk right now. I mean, Dad held out, Matthew held out, and Brady looks like he's on his way right now. So hopefully it gets, hopefully we can get figured out here.
That's Matthew Tkachuk of the Calgary Flames. That is from our Chicago interview at the NHL Players Tour with Matthew Tkachuk, as heard on our podcast, me and Elliot. I love it. You know, the great Muhammad Ali poem, which I believe is the shortest poem in the history of poetry, as George Plimpton has documented a couple of different times. It's just two words, me, we. Very much embodied in the Tkachuks, and the patriarch of that family is, of course, Keith Tkachuk, and he joins me now. Keith, how are you today? Thanks so much for joining me on the program.
I'm doing great, Jeff. How are you?
I'm doing really great. Listen, the Tkachuks, as we all know, one of the great hockey families, yourself, 18-year NHL career, 500 goals, over 1,000 points, member of the U.S. Hockey Hall of Fame. When you look at all the titles that you hold, whether it's, you know, for U.S. Hockey Hall of Fame, career numbers, etc., where does Hockey Dad fit for you?
Hockey Dad, and I think just Dad in general, is number one. There's no question about it. It's nothing better than, you know, watching a game where your kids are playing in, no matter what sport it is, no matter what level it is. It's a lot of fun, so... Right now, having two boys playing the NHL, it's been a lot of fun. It really has. It's stressful at times, but we're enjoying it. We really are.
How stressful was this off season with Brady's contract situation? You know, Matthew had a good time with it in Chicago, but you know, I thought brought up a really interesting point, which is, you know, this is a tight knit family, and we do things collectively here. Was this stressful for the entire family?
Well, I don't share Matthew's enthusiasm on the subject, you know, but at the end of the day, you know, it's Brady's life. I think, you know, anytime you're going through negotiations of this magnitude, you know, or at some points lack of negotiations, it was tough. It really was. But, you know, you have to be a parent first. You have to, you know, try to guide your son into what, you know, to make a good decision. And he's obviously represented by, you know, the best, in my opinion, is Newport. So, you know, Matthew had his way of dealing with things with Brady. And, you know, Brady always looks for Matthew for advice. And same with me. And sometimes you just got to hold your ground. But at the end of the day, you want to play. And deep down, everybody who knows Brady, he wanted to be back there. He didn't want to miss camp, and you know, that's the unfortunate part. You wish it was done a little bit sooner, but stuff like that happens, and deadlines. The deadline was probably the most important one, was the start of the season, but he's back there now. He's happy. He loves being with his teammates. He loves the staff. He loves playing in Ottawa, and he knows deep down that they're going to do whatever it takes to try to, you know, get to the next level, because they do have the pieces right now, even though they're awfully young.
Was this a matter of Brady at the end just saying enough is enough? I just want to play. Let's just get this deal done. Or is that an oversimplification?
I mean, Brady, you know, didn't indicate to me that he was, you know, I'm sure he was getting a little stressed because he misses his teammates. But, you know, it takes two to tangle. And I think both sides realized it's, you know, if he wasn't going to go, I think both sides came to their senses and to get a deal done, because if you don't get a deal done, now you're not looking at the next couple of days. You're probably looking at, you know, closer to December 1, and I don't think that helps either party.
Being joined by Keith Tkachuk, hockey legend, 18 years in the NHL, 1,000 points, member of the U.S. Hockey Hall of Fame. You know, we were all looking for, I mean, you must have followed this and seen how everyone was discussing Brady's situation. We're trying to find, you know, parallels between, you know, your career and what Brady is going through. And something that I kept coming back to was, you know, you signed an offer sheet in 95 with the Chicago Blackhawks. And I was wondering all summer long, was offer sheet a direction that was ever entertained by Brady, Newport, the Tkachuks in this entire situation?
No. You know, it's funny when you look at this whole, the speculation was the funniest part. some of the crap that was coming out. Like, some of this stuff that was coming out made zero sense. And obviously, being with, you know, being Brady's dad, I knew what everything was happening. It wasn't even close to what the media was suggesting. So, no, there was no talk of that. And I didn't hear anything of that. And Brady's going to probably ask me for my advice before anybody else. So, and he never asked me about that. So,
listen, Keith, there's the kids, and then there's you. And I want to talk about some of the things that you were involved in as a player. And I think that I really feel that history hasn't been kind to 1996 and the World Cup. We always look at 1987 and that Canada Cup, and specifically here in Canada, we always say that was the best hockey ever played. And I remember watching that, and I still think to this day that that was some of the best hockey I've ever seen in my life, period. I think 96 was great, too. Like, I would put 96 right in there as well. And listen, there was a performance of the ages for Mike Richter. That whole U.S. team that you were a part of were fantastic. I won't forget, you know, Guerin versus Primo and Tkachuk versus Shanahan. That was a special moment as well. But when you look back at that 1996 World Cup, what comes to Big Walt's mind right away?
Well, you know, that's something I wish, you know, the NHL and you know, would do more often, because I think it was an incredible tournament. I remember back in the day when, you know, the Canadians with Mario Lemieux, you know, scoring the winning goal against, you know, Russia. I mean, that's what you want. I think it's great hockey. Put all the best players together. I know the opportunity is going to present itself in the Olympics, but I think if you can do the World Cup every few years, I think it'd be great for hockey. Now, I know there's a lot of countries that can't really, you know, service a team as good as Canada or USA or Russia or Sweden or Finns, but I think it's great for the game of hockey to grow the game. But I had a great experience with that 96 team. You know, that was kind of we had a lot of young guys that obviously, you know, dating back to the 1980 Olympic team were the reason why we were playing at that point, because of those guys. So,
yeah.
We had a good team, solid group, did a lot of good things together, and it was a heck of a series, 2 out of 3, and winning 2 games in a row up in Montreal. A lot of people didn't give us a chance to even accomplish that, and we did it.
Well, the first game, wasn't the first game an overtime game too, the Philadelphia game?
Yeah, I think it was Eiserman who scored the game winner. They had replay back then. You know, I'm assuming that goal wouldn't come because it was like 3 zones offside, but whatever. It was just one of those things where, you know, you didn't expect to lose that game like that, especially in Philadelphia where the place was crazy. But It was a fun series. It was a fun tournament overall, and I had a blast.
I remember Calle Johansson was really good in that tournament for Sweden. I remember he was just outstanding. For that squad. You know, international hockey is fat, and this is an international year, as we all know, and we have our fingers crossed that everyone's safe and healthy enough to go to Beijing and to get the Olympics off in time and everyone stays safe. Whether it's, you know, you playing at the World Juniors, whether it's you playing in Albertville, which is for many people, you know, the first time that they would have seen you play, which would have been 92. When you look back at some of those other World Junior Championships in 91 or 92, or the Olympics in 1992, what jumps back to your mind? I mean, 91 was the first time I ever saw you play personally. And I remember, like, what was that game against Norway? You won like 20-2 or something like that. I remember thinking, like, what is it going to feel like playing in a game like that? What are your memories from that Saskatchewan tournament? And if you remember that Norway tilted rink game at all, like, what's it like playing in a game like that?
Well, you know, I didn't really know much about the World Juniors before this whole tournament. You know, it wasn't as big as it was in Canada. And I think the big thing about going to that tournament up in Saskatoon was, you know, the big thing was Eric Lindros was going to play. And I'd never seen him play, you know, in the U.S. We don't, you know, we didn't have access to games up like they do nowadays. So that was the big thing. Oh, can't wait to see Lindros. Can't wait to play against him. I heard this guy's a giant, and he was everything that, you know, he was made out to be, and it was fun playing against him. But that was a fun tournament, and just see the crowd and what Canada, playing in Canada, meant to the World Juniors. And that was a lot of fun playing the Olympics. Anytime you put on the, you know, the whatever, if you from the U.S., the USA jersey, or if you're from Canada, Canadian jersey, it means a lot. You take a lot of pride in that. And I really enjoyed, even dating back to my kids, too, playing for USA, the National Team Development Program, being in the U18s or playing in a Five Nations or them playing in the World Juniors. You know, I've been very blessed to be able to play in these and then watch my kids play and scout some of these events. And it's great hockey. I think it's great for all these young kids, you know, both boys and girls, to play in these tournaments and showcase themselves and try to win a gold medal.
You know, I was saying this to, and we're joined by Keith Tkachuk. You know, I was saying this to Andy Strickland on the program yesterday. We were talking about St. Louis-born hockey players, and I can still distinctly remember when Cam Jansen first played with the Guelph Storm of the OHL. I remember watching Guelph that season and saying, "Who's this kid from St. Louis?" And then it seemed, Keith, like 5 minutes later, there's like a dozen kids in the OHL that are all playing from St. Louis. And all of a sudden, that market pops as a hotbed where players are getting developed. Now, I know a lot of, you know, former players stayed. I mean, I know that Al MacInnis was a big one as well. But are there a couple of reasons why you can point to St. Louis as now this big hotbed of hockey development that's starting a pathway to the NHL?
Well, I mean, like you said before, it's a lot of alumni have put a lot of time and effort into making this a success. And then you add on what the Blues are doing both on and off the ice. I think it helps trickle down. And a lot of guys have learned to love to live, you know, living here. It's an easy place to live. And guys have fallen in love with it and staying here, raising kids here and putting a lot of time into helping not just their own, but other kids live their dreams. And it's a lot of fun. I mean, we have a young girl who's playing up in Wisconsin. I think she might be one of the leading scorers in the country, and McKenna Webster. So we got a lot of kids playing Division I hockey, a lot of kids playing junior hockey, and then obviously we got some guys playing in the NHL, which is great. And that's not your goal when you're coaching these teams. Your goal is to just to keep these guys playing and having fun. And if you can get a kid to, you know, a college and get a full scholarship, you know, that's enough for me. That means more to me than it is a kid playing in the NHL. It really does. So we're fortunate that these kids wanted to put the work in too. I mean, there's no, without them putting the work in, you know, this, but it's great. It's small, like Cam Jansen, tough kid. I mean, he was a great kid. The Stassi boys, Weidman, we can go on and on. There's a lot of kids, Ramage. There's a lot of kids that put their footprint in the ground for these kids, like my son, my boys, Matthew and Brady. So it's been a lot of fun. I really enjoy watching these kids. I follow these kids. I want to see these kids all do well. And, you know, we're living the dream as parents.
You know, there's a lot of hockey dads that I talk to, American hockey dads, who will say, you know, I want my kid to have the Canadian experience, to know what it's like to play with a Canadian NHL team. But then I want them to come back. Like, I want them to come back to play in the United States. You have two boys that are playing, one in Ottawa, as we know, and one playing in Calgary as well. They're getting the Canadian experience and everything that comes along with it, both positive and negative. Are you a hockey dad that says, have the Canadian experience, but then come home? Or are you a hockey dad that says, just go play in a market that fits you?
Well, you got to do what you got to do. I mean, I think it's, you know, you play where you're supposed to play. I mean, that's just the way things happen for a reason. You get drafted by a Canadian, that's the way it goes. I mean, my boys both enjoy playing. Now, it is stressful at times when you're not winning and everything's magnified. But, you know, all in all, I think they really have enjoyed it and really embraced it and really been good in their communities where they're playing. So there is, you know, any time a parent gets involved and says you want to do this or do that, I think it's just wrong. You don't let the cards fall where they fall, and things will happen for a reason.
How's travel for mom and dad now?
Well, we're empty nesters now, so this is crazy. So we're gone quite a bit with my scouting, going to watch college games and trying to mix in to see the boys play and see my daughter. So it's been a lot of fun. We're like I said, we really love watching our kids play sports, no matter what sport it is. So we're enjoying ourselves. But, you know, having them with the pandemic home quite a bit was really nice. But, you know, now that they're back at work, we miss them quite a bit. But we're going to enjoy watching them on TV.
You mentioned your scouting work. And when you think back to when you played to playing right now, some of the things are obvious, like the skating is obvious, the pace, all that, some of the individual skill sets. But I'm curious about what are the things that you see as similar? Like, what doesn't change in hockey for your estimation? Like, a lot of the skills have changed, the pace has changed, all of it. But going back to when you were in your early 20s, for example, what is still essentially the same, Keith? Because you've seen it all and experienced most of it.
Well, I mean, the compete, they've got the guys. It's fun to watch. I mean, like you said, but the game is faster. The game is better. There are better players. There's better goaltending. These guys make high-end plays that I couldn't even dream about doing in practice. Not even in a game that these guys are doing between the legs and making these high-end plays. But I think, you know, back when I played, the game was a little different. There was a little more accountability. And, you know, I think the game is smart by going away from that a little bit, but you still need some of that. Mm-hmm. And you still need some of that toughness, which I think is great for hockey and great for the fans. But the game is good. I'm telling you, Gary Bettman has done a heck of a job. This game is as good as anything. When you got McDavid, Austin Matthews, and I love the fact that you're seeing more and more Americans playing, not just from, you know, the three main states back when I was growing up, you know, Massachusetts and Michigan and Minnesota. Now you're seeing guys from all over the United States. And, you know, when you get a guy like Austin Matthews coming from Arizona and putting up the numbers he's putting up, and guys from Texas with the Jones family. And it's really neat to see Patrick Kane, you know, it's just awesome. I love the game, and the game is, especially if the guys go to the Olympics, I think it's going to be great for hockey in general and great for the sport. And now with the TV contracts and all these things, it's the arenas. I mean, and the way these guys, I've been on a couple of dad strips. Boy, these guys are treated pretty well. I guess that's one thing that has changed since I played. I remember commercial flights, you know, back when I was in Winnipeg. I mean, now that's unheard of, you know. So that's some of the things that have changed, I guess, off the ice. And the money is obviously going in the right direction. So it's fun. It's fun for these kids. These kids deserve it. They put a lot of time and effort into it. And it's a fun game to watch.
It really is. And, you know, the game is in such a wonderful place right now. I think we're all of the same mind about that. Can it be massaged? Yeah, absolutely. I still like that there's room in the game, Keith, for players that played the way that you did. Now, I know the era has changed, and so we're not going to see four-hour games anymore. But I still think that hockey is one of those games where when you look at what goes into a hockey player, skating, shooting, passing, vision, all those kinds of things, like, to me, toughness is still in there. And that just might just be, you know, getting hammered in the corner and coming out for your next shift. Like, that's still tough. Blocking a shot is still tough. I still like that skill set is still very much necessary in the game. Agree or disagree?
I agree. I think you need that. Like I said, there's got to be accountability out there, and you're going to play physical. That's the way the game should be played. Now, you know, you got to make sure there's so many camera angles, you can't get away with a lot of stuff out there. If you can keep it clean and fair and sticking up for your teammates, you still need that. I mean, some of these rivalries now with Florida and Tampa Bay, and, you know, I love still seeing that. I mean, last year with the, you know, pandemic, you know, all the Canadian teams playing against each other, seeing some of the rivalries coming back, and it's fun for the game. I think all four divisions are solid divisions, especially out east, so it's great for the game. You need to be physical. You're seeing what, you know, some of these teams can do late in the season in the playoffs. I mean, Tampa Bay, they can play multiple ways, but it's fun to watch. It really is. I think it's great for the game, and we need that physical side of the game.
We do indeed. Listen, Keith, it's always great catching up. Thanks so much for parking time for me today. It's much appreciated. Great to see Brady back in the mix. I loved his little celebration, Frank the Tank dance there too, when he was introduced to the crowd. That's a nice little touch. A lot of personality in the Tkachuk family, so we should probably be used to it by now. Keith, thanks so much for stopping by. All the best to you and your boys.
Thanks, Jeff. We're glad Brady's finally off the books now. So he's gone.
No more. Hey, Dad, I'm a little tapped out for the weekend. Can you wire me a couple of bucks? Nah, you're just fine, kid. Fine.
Thanks. Well, thanks for having me, Jeff.
All right. All the best. There he is, Keith Tkachuk, member of the U.S. Hockey Hall of Fame, 18-year NHL career, 500 goals, 1,000 points, and is from one of hockey's great families, the Tkachuks. Now, interesting happening We're standing by for Eric Engels, who is supposed to be on right now. However, Mark Bergevin has called a surprise press conference to address various issues. Like, we know the temperature is really hot in Montreal. We've talked about it on this program. I've talked about it on the podcast with Elliot. Elliot and I talk about it pretty much every day here on this show. It is real tough. So right now, Bergevin's conducting a press conference, hoping to get Engels on after, but I want to share what he's said so far that is particularly salient to what's happening right now with the Montreal Canadiens. These are some tweets from Eric Engels at Eric Engels, who covers the Habs for Sportsnet.ca. Bergevin says he doesn't want to continue talking about his contract situation, doesn't feel it has anything to do with what's happening with his team, and he maintains he's under contract and committed to his job right now. Okay, so a couple of things there. We all know hockey media, specifically Montreal Canadiens hockey media. He may not want to continue to talk about his contract, but Montreal Canadiens media does. As we just talked with Elliot off the top of the program, there is an extension there should he want it. And every day that goes by, this will be more and more of a conversation. And more will you see names like Patrick Roy trending on Twitter. He's under contract and committed to doing his job right now. Doesn't feel like he has anything to do with what's happening with his team. Okay, so I believe that that's true. The Montreal Canadiens are in a spot where Carey Price has stepped away, as we all know, where Shea Weber, to be blunt, might be done for his career. We don't know 100% yet, but we know what he played with the last season of his career. That is an effect. Losing a player like Deneau really hurts. I don't know if it's too much too soon for a player like Cole Caulfield, considering what expectations are. But right now, this is a team that, I don't want to say spiraling four games in, but the way that they're playing, or maybe more specifically, the way they're getting outplayed. Like, they went into Buffalo last week and got whipped. They played the San Jose Sharks at home yesterday and got whipped. And you have a player like Brendan Gallagher who wears it on his sleeve and looks angry and looks frustrated. You have another veteran player in Jeff Petrie who looks disappointed. And these are your veteran guys, and these were the first two that were at the podium. I believe they're the first two that were at the podium yesterday, right after the game. It's a bad situation in Montreal. Make no mistake about it. And if Carolina comes in tomorrow and puts another nickel up, another five-goal game, it's going to be even more trouble. Here's another quote from Mark Bergevin moments ago. Montreal is a different market. The fans are passionate. You guys have your job. We're a team. I'm part of the team. I thought it was important to address you today with what's happening. Nothing more to it than that. He knows the heat's on him. He knows the heat is on Dom Ducharme as well. Speaking of Dom Ducharme, by the way, he confirmed that Joel Edmondson is dealing with a family matter. This is from Eric Engels. His dad is not doing well. Edmondson's father was diagnosed with lung cancer in 2020. All of our thoughts are with the Edmondson family. That is much bigger than the game of hockey. Thank you very much. Like, there are a lot of reasons why the Montreal Canadiens have stumbled out of the gate. We know that. Engels just adds to Edmondson will be away from the Canadiens for an indeterminate amount of time. Bergevin says he was extremely shook up by his father not doing well in his battle with lung cancer. Quote, I gave him a hug, Bergevin said, adding he told Edmondson, family comes first. This is terrible. This is a team that is unraveling on the ice and off the ice as well. I don't think anyone takes any delight in what's happening to the Montreal Canadiens, specifically considering the nature of some of the personal situations at Carey Price, and now that we know what Joel Edmondson's going through. Yet, on the ice, this is still very much a business. And on the ice, this is an NHL team, and this is an NHL team that's coming off a Stanley Cup final appearance against the Tampa Bay Lightning, and where expectations were high, despite the fact that many looked at last year's playoff run and said the goalie got hot. And yeah, the goalie did get hot, but they also had some big performances. Philip Deneau, I thought, was outstanding. I think we all did. Nick Suzuki was outstanding. Shea Weber was outstanding. Corey Perry was outstanding. Some of the players are not there anymore. Some of those players have stepped away due to either injury or personal reasons. There's a lot to Montreal right now, and none of it good. And that's why you're seeing Marc Bergevin call this press conference. Because the longer you stay quiet in Montreal, that's the one thing that, whether you're a general manager, a head coach, or a player, if you stay too quiet for too long, it gets worse. Bergevin knows this. Ducharme knows this. Everybody knows this. And that's why the press conference today. Make no mistake about it. Tomorrow's game 5 of the Montreal Canadiens season. And you may say, calm down, it's 82 games. Tomorrow's game is huge for Montreal. They're 0-4, and Jesperi Kotkaniemi returns as a member of the Carolina Hurricanes. Tomorrow's game is enormous. Let's step away. If we have time for angles, and if the Bergevin press conference is done, we'll pop them on. In the meantime, we'll talk about the Florida Panthers next. That's a team that's perfect so far on the season, beating the Stanley Cup champions Tampa Bay Lightning last night. George Richards is going to be dropping by the program here in a couple of moments to talk about the Cats from Florida Hockey Now. Stay tuned. The Merrick Show continues across the Sportsnet Radio Network. Welcome back to the program. Quick couple of notes here, further on the Marc Bergevin press conference in Montreal. As per Eric Engels of Sportsnet.ca, Marc Bergevin confirms he absolutely wants a new contract with the Montreal Canadiens. But as Elliot Friedman told us in Hour 1, it seems as if the Chris Drury deal with the New York Rangers has, in a lot of ways, changed the financial landscape for that position in the National Hockey League. Don't look now, but the Florida Panthers are one of the most impressive teams in the NHL, period. And this is all punctuated by a big 4-1 win last night over the defending Stanley Cup champions and state rivals, the Tampa Bay Lightning. And in this game, Anton Lundell, congratulations. Sam Reinhart with a couple of points. Alexander Barkov with a couple of points. Spencer Knight with 30 saves. Everything's coming up cat right now. And no one knows that more than our good friend George Richards from Florida Hockey Now. He joins me on the program. George, good afternoon. How are you today?
I'm terrific. What's going on?
Well, a lot up here, and a lot of it involves the Florida Panthers. Now, in a lot of ways, like, Florida seemed like a combination of a hipster pick at the beginning of the season and a really safe pick at the same time. Last season went spectacularly well for the Florida Panthers outside of the first round loss, the hands of the eventual Stanley Cup champion, Tampa Bay Lightning. A couple of moves in the off season, most notably a player like Sam Reinhart comes in, and a contract extension for Alexander Barkov, the face of the franchise and the spine of the team. And this team right now looks good. And both Sergei Bobrovsky looks good, along with Spencer Knight, the rookie. From what you've seen in the first couple of games here, what stands out about the Florida Panthers to George Richards? You cover them and are a lot closer to them than I am.
Well, I mean, you look at the Panthers, and they're obviously a team that can score a lot of goals, and they've been scoring goals. They got three last night against Vasilevsky. They got the empty net from Anthony Duclair at the end. But what I've been most impressed with the Panthers has been their defensive play. They've really been helping out their goalies. They've really been, you know, getting in front of the net and clearing out rebounds and keeping the pucks out of danger situations, something that we certainly didn't see two seasons ago in Sergei Bobrovsky's first year, where it was just, you know, a free-for-all in front of the net. They improved on that a little bit last year, but this year, through the first three games, small sample size for sure, they've really done a nice job in front of their goalies, and both Sergei and Spencer Knight have given them three terrific starts.
So I'm very curious about the Panthers over the past couple of seasons, because we've seen the team start to spend money only halfway through the season. You know, the general manager is told, okay, we got to start getting rid of contracts here. You know, there's big contracts for Joel Quenneville, the head coach, big contracts for Sergei Bobrovsky. And then in this offseason, it seemed to be more spend, and it's Alexander Barkov with a deal that I look at and I say, that's going to be a good deal all the way through the contract. That to me looks like a home run by Bill Zito. But they're spending, and we're not used to seeing the Florida Panthers spend this much money. But they're a good team, so why not? But why the change in philosophy? You know, does Bill Zito look at this and say, this is we're starting to trend upwards, and if you look at winning cycles, we're on our way up, and we need to start spending commensurate with how good the team is. Explain to me how Vinny Viola's purse strings have been loosened, George, in the last couple of seasons.
Well, I mean, I think ever since Vinny Viola bought the team in 2013, he's been willing to spend the money. And I know that there were reports a couple years ago that Vinny said that there was an internal cap, you know, $10 million under. I remember reading that report that I never could get verified. But the Panthers spent about $6 million under the cap that year, so there was some validity to it. But look at when he bought the team in 2013, first thing they did was they went out and got some players just before training camp started. The team was in last place in the Atlantic Division, seemingly going nowhere. He agrees to trade for Roberto Luongo and take on that contract. The next year they go for Yager. So this is a team that has been spending money, regardless of who is in the front office, whether it's Dale Talon or, you know, the year they had the split GMs and now Bill Zito. Vinny Viola has given his hockey operations people pretty much whatever they wanted. And, you know, I know the team is not making any money, but, you know, they're spending money. And now it seems like they're spending it in the right places. I think there have been some mistakes made in the past. And I think that's where you're alluding to, you know, when they gave Dave Boland that big contract and it didn't Yep. pan out, all of a sudden the owner starts looking at other contracts like, well, what am I paying for here? You know, that kind of thing. But now, you know, when he's seeing some results, you know, go ahead, spend what you have to.
Anton Lundell, by the way, we should mention, with his first career NHL goal last Yeah. night in that 4-1 victory. What has the market done with this team? I mean, last year was a really good season for the Florida Panthers. This year, starting off gangbusters, perfect so far, and a real solid win last night over Tampa. What is the marketplace doing with this? Are we starting to see a bump yet, an uptick in fan attendance?
No, we haven't seen that. And in fact, the attendance has been, you know, pretty pedestrian through the first two games. You know, they didn't sell out opening night. Saturday night against the Islanders was even less than that. You know, this is a very weird market. I think the interest for the Panthers is higher than I've ever seen it from the outside. You know, TV ratings, the talk on the street, you know, the talks, the sports talk shows, that kind of thing. They're actually talking about the Panthers. Mm-hmm. I think the sorry state of the Miami Dolphins and Miami Hurricanes is helping that along a little bit, because people down mm-hmm. here just want to see somebody win, and you got the Panthers and the Heat might just do that. But they're hoping it'll come. You know, the attendance will be there. I mean, the crowds that they've had are loud and into it and engaged. And we're just going to have to see. It's October hockey in the Miami market. I mean, it is what it is.
You know, though, I would have thought that having a series against the Tampa Bay Lightning, because we haven't seen it before and we're waiting for these two Yep. teams to be good at the same time so we can see them in the playoffs, I thought that would have given That would have given the Florida Panthers, despite the fact that it was a loss on the series, in the series, I thought that that would have given the Panthers a shot in the arm and would have, you know, would have spiked fan interest at least a little bit. Maybe we just need more of these two teams, or do you think things would have been different if Florida had just flat out won that series last season?
Well, they might have been different. I think they would have, you know, perhaps, you know, maybe gotten a few more fans. But I think there's still a wait and see because, you know, like you said, that this is an organization that, that hasn't made the playoffs in consecutive years since 1996-97. And, you know, every time they have a good year, you know, look at 2012, they end up in last place the next year. They have that great team in 16. In 17, they're 8-9 points out of the playoffs. So I think that there is, you know, some part of the South Florida casual sports fan that looks at the Panthers as, you know, prove it to me. Yeah, all right, yeah, you guys really look good, but you've said that before. We've been fooled before. And I think there are some people that are just, they're watching. The TV ratings for opening night doubled over the year before. The TV ratings are strong. I'm sure they were great last night for Tampa Bay. People are watching. People are paying attention. Whether they're, you know, going to the games yet, we've only had two games. So let's see what happens tomorrow against Colorado. A huge game, probably a bigger game on the national stage than it is locally. That's, you know, that's, but that's what we're dealing with here.
I want to ask you about Sam Reinhart and what you've seen so far and what you think of the player. You know, there were a couple of teams that were in on Sam Reinhart as Buffalo was looking to move him at the end of last season. I believe that San Jose was in on Sam Reinhart as well. Florida gets him and a nice bit of business for both sides. Florida got the player.
Sure.
What have you seen so far in Sam Reinhart, someone that, as you know, is a pretty versatile guy, can play wing, can play center as well?
I think last night was his best game. You know, he started the season on the top line with Sasha Barkov. That's the real estate everybody on the Panthers wants. You want to play with Barkov. You know, through a game and a half in the second game, Joel Quenneville moved him down to the third line and now has him with Lundell. And that was a really nice combination last night. Lundell's first NHL goal comes off a, you know, nice bit of two-on-one with Reinhart. So I thought last night was Reinhart's best game with the Panthers. Again, we're three games in. Reinhart's going to be a terrific player with the Panthers, especially for that cost. I mean, when that trade came down, we kept waiting for the next shoe to drop. You're like, okay, the number of the first round pick and the seventh round goalie. Okay, who else? What else is going? There's got to be, and that was it. So a nice deal for the Panthers, especially when you're able to sign him as an RFA. I think he's going to be fine. He'll end up on that top line eventually, unless he and Anton Lundell look like the second coming of something special and they just keep those two together. But I think Reinhart will end up back with Barkov and Edward Hagee. And I think he's just a fantastic addition to this Florida Panther team.
You know, I think a lot of us have always felt that one of the best qualities of a great player is the ability to make everybody around him better. And we've seen some, you know, elite level players that can't do that. Alexander Barkov is not one of those players. Whether it's the Midas touch, call it whatever you want, the Barkov bump that players get after they play with him for a long time. You've seen a lot of it. You know all the players that I'm talking about. Elliot and I would always joke about Bill Zito's number one job after coming over from Columbus was get this guy under a long-term deal. When you look at all the players that have come and gone in Florida, how many of them were made better by playing with Alexander Barkov?
Wow, a ton. I mean, anybody that plays with Barkov, you know, sees an uptick in production. It was one thing a lot of people always talk about, you know, when Sasha Barkov was made captain of the team, a lot of people question that because he's such a quiet, unassuming guy. He's got a dry sense of humor, very intelligent guy. I mean, he's just an all-around great guy. But on the surface, he's not that rah-rah, you know, that kind of guy that a lot of people, you know, want in a captain. The Panthers were, they're like, guys don't want to let Barkov down. He's out there first at practice. He's out there last at practice. You don't want to be the guy that's off the ice and have Barkov look at you, you know, with that side eye in the locker room. And I think anybody that plays on his line or plays on the power play with him, they just want to do great by the guy because he's going to find you. You're going to get your chances. Yeah, there's just been a whole line. You look at Carter Verhaeghe, fourth line guy in Tampa Bay, is a healthy scratch more times than not. He comes to Florida, Joel Quenneville, you're on the top line. He hasn't moved off that top line since he got here, had a career year last year, having a great start to this year. I mean, just another in a line. Anthony Duclair got put up there, spent, you know, most of his season on that line with Barkov, just, you know, had a great season with Florida. So anybody that plays with Barkov, like I said, that's the real estate you want to occupy. You want to be on the left or you want to be on the right of that guy. You just want to be somewhere in his vicinity.
That real estate is high rent district. George, we got to hustle. Thanks so much for stopping by. Should be a fun one. Yep. Florida faces off against Colorado tomorrow. We appreciate this, George. Thanks, pal.
All right. Anytime. See ya.
There he is. George Richards, who covers the Florida Panthers for Florida Hockey Now. Let's get to Eric Engels. Fresh off a very impromptu Eric Mark Bergevin press conference. Listen, we know the temperature is hot in Montreal. The 0-4 start, only scoring 3 goals. What we saw last night against the San Jose Sharks, a pretty timid performance by the Montreal Canadiens. I shared some of your tweets with the listeners so far and retweeted a couple of things as well. What was your biggest takeaway from the quickly assembled Mark Bergevin press conference?
Oh my gosh, I'm not even sure I've had enough time to think about one specific one other than, you know, I think the biggest question in the marketplace right now is about the leadership of the team and the void left by Carey Price being away, by Shea Weber, obviously, in his situation and being away, by Joel Edmondson, who was a very underrated part of their success last year. You know, Mark Bergevin said he was their steadiest player beyond the first game in Toronto for the rest of the season, and I would absolutely agree with that assessment, but also a guy that everybody loves and such a huge part of that room. And, you know, they have Brendan Gallagher, they have Ben Chiarot, they have Jeff Petrie. It's not like they have no leaders in their room. You know, Mark Bergevin brought up the point that the New York Islanders lost John Tavares and they just found a way. They just found a way to move forward. He expected that his team would find a way to move forward. He expects that they'll continue to do that because trade isn't really an option that he's exploring right now. I think it's an unrealistic option this early in the season to begin with and with their salary cap situation, but he said it's really got nothing to do with that and more to the fact that he's not going to make a change to make a change. So I guess those are my biggest takeaways here. How do the Canadians respond to what's a perceived leadership void and with urgency to obviously turn this around quickly?
You know, I think one of the things, this is, listen, a lot of this comes off the Larry Brooks report in the Post from earlier on where he talked about, you know, the potential for Mark Bergevin to go to Los Angeles, buddies with Luke Robitaille. You know, we all know that Rob Blake's in the last year of a contract as a general manager of that team, connect the dots. And Bergevin comes out and says, I want to sign an extension with Montreal. Now, Elliot was on the program earlier on and said, like, look, the Chris Drury contract in New York has changed the landscape for all general managers. How did you receive that statement by Mark Bergevin that he wants to stay in Montreal and sign a contract extension?
Well, I don't know if it was news to some people within the room, but it wasn't to me. I've been reporting that going back a few weeks when this all became a much hotter discussion point. And it's, I think Larry Brooks is onto something in terms of Mark Bergevin's market value across the league. You know, you look at his 10 years of work. Yes, there's some time in between there where it didn't go smoothly, but that's when Jeff Molson backed him, you know, in 2018 after a rough year and a half. You go back before that, it was like 5 years where it almost seemed as though he couldn't make a wrong move. The Canadians made the playoffs in 4 of those years. They were a really strong team, much better than people expected, especially when he first took over. He inherited some good pieces. He added some good pieces. He's made a bunch of good trades. He's proven his value as an executive around the league. And I think he, in his own mind, knowing the duress and the stress of working in this market and this unique market, as he referred to it today, He's set a value for himself and wants to be paid that to continue in that role. He wants to continue in that role very badly, which is a contrast to what we heard towards the end of last year, where it seemed as though it was really wearing on him. But I think he was reinvigorated by the playoff run, and he really had time to think about it and came to an emotional place where he wanted to be in Montreal. He set his price. It's clear that Jeff Molson wasn't willing to meet it before the season started. And I think that puts the whole relationship in a very precarious place. I don't know what it means for the future for Marc Bergevin in Montreal, but if I had to put a bet on it right now, I would probably bet that this is his last year as GM here, unless something changes drastically between him and Molson over the coming weeks. You know, I think Elliot's right. Like, this is about money. This is about value. And, whoa, it just got loud in French in this room. I'm going to move. you know, like, that's the situation. And I think, you know, you can look beyond LA too. The California teams have peculiar kind of situations in terms of where they're at in their development curves. I think those are options. I would even go as far to say, without causing a complete explosion in your own market in Toronto there, that I wonder what the interest level would be for Bergevin if, for whatever reason, a job became available there. You know, one thing is clear. He wants to continue as a GM. He loves what he does.
With Eric Engels from Sportsnet.ca, an interesting press conference today from Marc Bergevin, general manager of the Montreal Canadiens. Now, this is in advance of tomorrow's matchup where the Carolina Hurricanes come to mind, and I can't think of any storylines that go along with this one. Can you, Eric Engels?
You know, I'm about to put a piece up on Sportsnet.ca about Kotkaniemi returning, and the one, I guess, basically what I'm writing is, I think, the one thing I didn't like about that whole situation was Tom Dunnan and Don Waddell saying it wasn't about vengeance. I think they should have just leaned right into the whole thing with all the tweets that came out, say, oh, you know, yep, we need good marketing. Just lean into it. It was absolutely about vengeance. If not, you're making yourself look bad because you're paying a guy $6.1 million to play him as a out of position as a winger, which that's where he was on the fourth line last game. He's played 12 minutes, topped out at 12:09 on the season. He's got 0 points. It's early. They've only played two games. He'll adjust. He'll find a way. We all know that he's never going to live up to a $6.1 million salary figure, and you have to overpay to get players that you want. But this was about putting the screws to Montreal, and they did a pretty good job of doing it. They forced Bergevin to choose between keeping a prospect that he sunk 3 years of development into and a guy that a year prior he had referred to, along with Nick Suzuki, as a guy you'd like to build around for a decade, and screwing up his entire salary structure. And for the Hurricanes end of it, you know, they get the player, and even if he performs to less than marginal expectation, it doesn't change the fact that they're a Stanley Cup contender and they could go any which way they want to moving forward, including not qualifying him at 6.1 and letting him walk, to getting a shorter term or deal done at a lower number, and however it works out, if he ends up being a replacement up the middle for Trocheck, who potentially walks in free agency, great for them. They've got to develop him the right way, too. You know, Kotkaniemi didn't like his development in Montreal particularly, and he's not going to like it much in Carolina if he continues to be a fourth-line winger. He's going to start with Aho and Teravainen against the Canadiens. That'll give him a great opportunity to kind of explode and write the story, and I'm sure Waddell and Dunnan will be doing cartwheels if that's what happens in Montreal and they extend the Canadiens' misery. And I think they should have leaned into that from the start instead of denying it was even the case.
I'm with you. I'm with you on that one. Just listen, embrace being a heel in this pro wrestling storyline. And two, and we'll end on this one. I got about 90 seconds left here in the show. Maybe actually 60 seconds. I firmly believe that there is a contract extension in Don Waddell's desk for Jesperi Kotkaniemi that will mysteriously spring out sometime in January. Are you with me, Eric?
I firmly believe he could easily take it out of his desk and tear it up if he doesn't see what he likes. You know, like that's the thing. No, nobody's married to anything. You know, as far as Kotkaniemi is concerned, if they don't handle his development in a certain way, what's to prevent him from saying, you know, I'll hold out for the qualifying offer. You know, so long as things are not signed off on completely, and I agree with you, Jeff, it's that's the likely scenario here, which will make it a better value proposition for Carolina if he signs one of those deals. But nothing's done until it's done.
Very true. Great job, Eric. Nothing like a last-minute press conference from one of the most important people in hockey, the general manager of the Montreal Canadiens. Thanks so much for this.
Thank you.
There is Eric Engels from Sportsnet.ca. I want to thank all of our guests today. George Richards from Florida Hockey Now, the impressive Florida Panthers. They'll face off against the Colorado Avalanche tomorrow. That's a big game. Keith Tkachuk stopped by, longtime NHL forward, 18 seasons specifically, to talk about, amongst other things, his two kids, who are both very wealthy right now. Thank you very much. Lisa Dillman from The Athletic in Hour 1 talked to us about the Los Angeles Kings, and Elliot Friedman, who went all over the map with free agent, including that exciting Minnesota-Winnipeg game from last night. Only two on the board tonight around the NHL. Enjoy it. We're back tomorrow with more of The Merrick Show.